Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Astonishing Legends Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back for Season 2 of Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf. I want to start out by thanking everyone who hangs out with us on Instagram and Twitter, and especially in the RHPB Facebook group. You are all such wonderful people, and it's an absolute joy to read your comments and to see the pictures you post of your bookshelves and the books you're reading and the bookstores you're visiting. It's so much fun. You guys are the best, and you've made the break go by so fast. So I really am glad you're there. I love seeing you on all those platforms. Now, I want to remind everyone that the first ever Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf live podcast event is going to take place next week on Thursday, October 10th, and that's in Los Angeles, and there's still tickets available. It's going to be me doing a live podcast. Nima Kazaruni will be there playing music live. Kevin Ducey will be there doing sound recording and engineering. You'll get to meet him. The location we found, I've recently been told, is 100% haunted. It's an old building in Koreatown just off Western. It's over 100 years old, and it was, in a previous lifetime, a speakeasy back in the 1920s, for real. The guy who runs the place says that when he's there late at night, he doesn't like being there late at night. Let's put it that way. So come on down. Tickets are available at Eventbrite. There's a link in our show notes, but if you just go to Eventbrite and just type in Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf, by the time you get through Richard Haddam, it'll direct you straight to where you can get tickets. And you can still get tickets. So if you're in the LA area, Thursday, October 10th, I would love to see you. Now, also this Saturday night, October 6th, I will be live in person at the Los Angeles Comic-Con. That's going to be at 6 o'clock Saturday night. I'll be on a panel hosted by Susan Lambert, my wife, and the co-host of the award-winning podcast 80s TV Ladies. And the panel is called Volume Up, Launching Your Entertainment Podcast. And there's going to be some great people. We're going to have a lot of fun. So if you're in Los Angeles, again, swing by the convention center Saturday night, 6 o'clock. Come on over and say hi. Let's see, what else? Oh, I want to remind you that the podcast, Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf, is now available on YouTube. All of Season 1 is available, and we'll be rolling out Season 2 as the episodes drop. So if you're a YouTube person and that's how you like to conduct your life, we're now on YouTube, so check it out. And finally, you can now join us on Patreon. There's a lot coming up on Patreon. Besides exclusive merch that's already available, there will also be exclusive Patreon-only AMAs, Ask Me Anything, and there's going to be bonus episodes that are going to start rolling out in October. Now, I want you to know, your Patreon donations go directly to paying the people involved in the show. And a portion of all your donations are going to go to a favorite charity of mine called Write Girl. Write Girl is a creative writing and mentoring organization that promotes creativity, critical thinking, and leadership skills to empower teen girls and gender-expansive youth. So if you want to know more, check them out at writegirl.org and learn all about the great work that they do. So with Patreon, you're going to get a bunch of cool stuff, and you're also going to provide an absolutely essential link in the Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf chain, keeping us all afloat over here, and also doing some good for the community with Write Girl. So please, if you can, join us on Patreon. It really means a lot. I think that's all the business we have to do up front. I am so glad to be back talking to you guys. I'm so glad you're back. So let's get right to it. Here we go. Monsters Among Us by Linda Godfrey. I hate camping. I've never understood the appeal of denying myself the luxuries that generations of scientists, engineers, and inventors have developed to keep me sheltered, clothed, and comfortable. For me, roughing it means staying in a hotel where the room service ends at midnight. Most of my adult camping experiences have been with my kids and their classmates at local spots, all within a couple hours of my house, but they might as well have been at the bottom of the ocean. I made the best of it. I quickly sought out the parents who brought booze. And luckily, with my kids' school, it wasn't ever just a bottle of cheap bourbon. It was always an ice chest filled with champagne and good gin and freshly squeezed lemon juice, and we'd sit in those horrible collapsible nylon chairs and drink French 75s out of small plastic cups, and after a while, I'd begin to feel almost civilized. Even though the kids have now aged out of all that, Susan's been pushing for another trip into the woods. I don't know, I'll say. Apparently the woods aren't safe. Have you ever heard of bipedal canines? Susan begins to slowly shake her head, knowing exactly where this is going. I go there anyway. Bipedal canine isn't a phrase I was familiar with until I read Linda Godfrey's Monsters Among Us, Tarcher Perigee, 2016. Now I can't stop thinking about them. A bipedal canine is a very large dog-like thing that walks on its hind legs and is anywhere from 6 to 8 feet tall. And while it's referred to as canine, these creatures often resemble nothing more than classic werewolves, making them bipedal lupines, but why get hung up on words? The important thing is, we all have something new to worry about. I expected that werewolves and dogmen were going to be the side dishes in this book, but really, they're the main course. And no one knew as much about these creatures as Linda Godfrey. Godfrey, who passed away in 2022, became a legend in the field of cryptozoology when she first reported on what became known as, quote, the Beast of Bray Road. A werewolf-like creature, oh hell, we're going to be here a while, let's just call it a werewolf, that was seen by numerous witnesses around Elkhorn, Wisconsin in the early 1990s. When Godfrey published her first book, The Beast of Bray Road, Prairie Oak Press, 2003, I'm guessing she didn't know what she was getting into. Once it was out, people crept out of the woodwork to quietly but sincerely share their own stories about werewolf sightings. A lot of them were close to home in Wisconsin and the Midwest. But other reports came in from all over America, stretching back into the mists of folklore and continuing up until, well, right now. If Godfrey's own files are to be believed, and I think they are, then it's likely someone in America has seen a monstrous walking dog sometime in the last few weeks. In my view, Godfrey did a brave thing, and a great service to the study of the paranormal, or folklore if that makes you more comfortable. She reported on a rare, even unheard-of experience that people were having but were afraid to talk about. and it gave other people the courage to share their stories. Now, the knee-jerk skeptical reaction would be that one reported story, which itself must have been a hoax or a misidentification, became the catalyst for a lot of piling on from attention seekers who lied about their own experiences for attention or money or thrills. What actually happened was that people read Godfrey's book and then privately reached out to her to share their own stories, mostly to see if she had answers for them. Could she explain to them what it was they saw? The stories in Godfrey's book are almost all anonymous. The witnesses were rightly afraid of being ridiculed, but still, they wanted answers. So much for attention seekers. Because the majority of the witnesses lived in Wisconsin, Godfrey was able to personally investigate their stories. She met the people, sized them up, and found that for the most part, they were serious, credible people who had experienced something traumatic. Okay, what did they experience? Let's take a look at one of the stories. It's July 17th, 2014. Susan, not her real name, also not my Susan, is in bed but not asleep when her small dog goes berserk, barking like crazy. Maybe it has to go outside and pee. She gets up and opens the door to the patio, but instead of running outside to relieve itself, the dog cowers behind her. Susan looks up toward the trees at the back of her yard and sees something, quote, tall and furry walking by. Okay, now right now I want you all to imagine a bear on its hind legs walking in your backyard. Can you see it? Its large, mitten-like paws are held out in front of it for balance, and it kind of waddles on large, rounded back legs, right? We're all picturing the same thing? Which means we all know what a bear on its hind legs looks like. Well, this isn't a bear. The creature Susan sees is partially lit by her deck lamps and the neighborhood streetlights. It is 6 feet tall and covered in thick gray fur. It has pointed ears and a pronounced canine snout sticking out from its head. Its arms hang down, ending in clawed hands, and it walks on toe pads rather than flat-footed. It moves easily at a slow, relaxed pace. Then suddenly, it turns its head and looks at her. There is no light reflected in its black eyes, but she is certain that it's aware of her, aware that it is being seen and observed. Susan grabs her dog and runs back into the house. Susan emailed Linda Godfrey 4 days later, on the 21st of July, and Linda drove up to Heartland, Wisconsin the very next day to investigate the sighting personally. The weather had been fairly dry over the past 5 days or so, and they were able to find and photograph footprints that were clearly canine and measured about 5 inches in length. I find this impressive. You're talking to a guy who knows exactly how big 5 inches is. It's really big. The prints appeared to be the hind feet of something. They found no prints that appeared to be the front feet. The prints were at least an inch deep in the soft mulch and must have been made by something quite heavy because, try as they might, Linda and Susan were not able to make a similar impression, even by stomping and jumping in the same area. Moments later, they made an even more disturbing discovery. More prints were found in the mulch along the perimeter of the house, beneath the bedroom windows, including that of Susan's daughter. Whatever this creature was, it had been looking in at them. Another story has eerie similarities. Kelly, not her real name, tells about the time she and her friend Hannah were hanging out at Hannah's house when suddenly Hannah looked out the living room windows into the backyard, said, "What the heck is that?" and then seconds later fled in terror past her friend and down into the basement. Now keep in mind, this was in the middle of the afternoon. Kelly went to see what her friend was so freaked out by and was stunned to see an 8-foot creature looking in through the 6-foot-tall glass storm door. It was hunched over so it could see inside. Kelly was no more than 6 feet away from it. It had a huge head, like a hyena, that seemed too big for its body. It had yellow eyes, a long snout, and giant canine teeth. Long, fur-covered, human-looking arms hung down by its side. She said that, quote, "Something about its look reminded me of the intelligence you see when you look at a human being, not the stupid animal look, if you know what I mean." And all it was doing was staring into the house. Are they as curious about us as we are about them? After a minute, it simply turned, walked across the backyard, and then off into the woods. Imagine an all-night diner in rural Wisconsin. It's a Friday in mid-November, just around midnight. Let's call the place the Pine Tree Cafe. It's the only lighted structure for miles. You can see the misty glow of its sign hovering somewhere in the distance, and then suddenly you're there. I park and go inside. Allison Jornlin and Kimberly Poppy are already there, sitting in a booth by the front windows. Outside, the temperature is dropping fast, and the weather calls for snow. Unlike me, Allison and Kimberly both had the privilege to know Linda Godfrey personally. They worked with her, and they were her friends. The two women in the booth sip black coffee from thick, white mugs. Piled on the table in front of them are a collection of knives, bear spray canisters, a five-pointed throwing star, and one iridescent, green and purple, skull-encrusted set of brass knuckles. Allison says, "Whoever shows up with the fewest weapons pays." I empty my pockets. Car keys, four $20 bills, and a tube of chapstick. A small bottle of Advil. A torn blister pack of antacids with only two left. My AAA card. A Burke Williams complimentary hot stone massage gift certificate. A Canadian dime. And a crumpled packet of Splenda in case I go somewhere that doesn't have Splenda. Kim smiles. Guess we know who's paying. I'm about to argue that an overdose of Advil could easily kill a small rodent, but instead I just slide into the booth. I greet Allison. We met once before at one of the Astonishing Legends holiday parties. You guys know the ones I'm talking about. Scott and Forrest post those shows every Christmas, but wow, to actually be there in person is unbelievable. Scott in the kitchen making his famous Cocoa Pebbles Rice Krispie treats. Forrest at the piano freestyling a jazz version of Frosty the Snowman. Tess Feifel tending bar, which for her is just opening cans of PBR and Four Loko and emptying them into a giant plastic garbage can filled with pineapple juice and Diet Dr. Pepper. I remember sitting by the Christmas tree while Allison talked about Linda Godfrey and wishing I'd been able to meet her myself. After reading Monsters Among Us, I got back in touch with Allison so I could find out more about Linda. So we set up a meeting and she brought Kimberly, who knew Linda too. And that's why we're all here tonight. At least that's what I thought. Allison Jornlin and her brother Mike Huberty own and run a company called American Ghost Walks. It's a company that currently offers 25 ghost tours in Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, California, Louisiana, Hawaii, Maine, and Puerto Rico. Allison has seen ghosts herself and a UFO once. She met Linda Godfrey a few times, mostly over the phone, and they had shared details of various supernatural cases that they had each reported on. But it wasn't until 2017, while investigating a case that Allison found not to be authentic, that she and Linda really bonded. "Linda backed me up," Allison said. You see, when writers of the paranormal call something out as a hoax, sometimes the reaction can be even more hostile than when the criticism comes from full-blown skeptics. "That's what made Linda really embrace me," Allison said. "When she saw that I was under attack, she really reached out." I know what she's talking about. While you might not think that the world of paranormal investigation is cutthroat, it really kind of is. There are all sorts of camps, people waving all kinds of flags, and many are more than willing to stoke deeply held, lifelong grudges against others who don't see things the way they do. You know, just like real life. And to a large extent, the area of paranormal investigations is also still a boys' club. It just is. There's a lot of guys out there who don't think women should be investigating UFOs and Bigfoot and haunted houses. Or at the very least, they don't take them as seriously when they do. Linda Godfrey faced that sort of thing throughout her career. And as it turns out, people got very pissed off when Linda cried foul on something called the Gable film. And I'm not going to describe it, you just have to see it. You can find it on YouTube, it'll take you 5 minutes. Look for the Gable film. Anyway, she knew what it was like to get attacked for speaking out, and she wasn't about to stand by and do nothing when she saw it happening to somebody else. Linda was a mentor to a lot of people, Allison said, including a lot of men. But she took a special interest in supporting other women in the field because she knew firsthand the extra challenges they faced. She was also happy to share the spotlight. Anytime she had a speaking opportunity, Allison said, she'd say, "Allison's investigating that case, you want to talk to her?" Then she'd take me along with her whenever she got a gig. Kimberly Poppy sits across from me in the booth, next to Allison. She also knew Linda Godfrey. Kimberly owns and operates a legendary store on Pierce Street in Milwaukee called Cattywampus Antiques and Oddities. But she met Linda when she reached out to relate to her a terrifying incident from her own childhood that was witnessed by over a dozen people. It's the kind of story Linda would hear a lot over the next few decades. As Kim tells it, the story goes like this. Quote, "It was the middle of the day. Suddenly, people in the neighborhood were yelling and screaming. It was summertime in the early 1970s, and everyone came out onto the street to see what was going on. At the house across the street on the corner, there was a lady on her porch protecting her child. She was yelling at this thing to go away. It was an animal walking on two legs. My mom told me to get back in the house, but I didn't. There were at least a dozen adults, and not a single one knew what it was we were looking at. Afterwards, they all said they'd never seen anything like it before. It was freaking them out, so they said, let's just say it was a dog with rabies. And they decided to never talk about it again. But Kim's mom did talk about it. And whenever she did, she called it that dog thing. Kim is someone who has had paranormal experiences throughout her life. From a young age, she could see ghosts. It's as if her mind is like one of those giant radio dishes that catches signals from all over. To me, and maybe to you, it sounds cool. But a talent like Kim's comes with its own set of problems. Kim said, "I've had some boyfriends over the years say, maybe you shouldn't mention to the manager of this establishment that you just saw a ghost. They might think you're a crazy person. But the angle I always take is, or maybe if you mention it, other people will talk about it too, and not feel like someone will think they're crazy if they talk about it." According to both Allison and Kimberly, Linda was a person you could go to with your story. That was how she amassed so many of them. But how did it all start? In late 1991, Linda was working as a journalist for The Week, a Sunday paper distributed for free to every home and business in Walworth County in southeastern Wisconsin. In the slow week between Christmas and New Year's Day, Linda found herself sitting in the office of John Fredrickson, an animal control officer for the county. Apparently, local residents had reported encounters with a mysterious animal in the area of Bowers and Bray Roads in the city of Elkhorn. Linda watched as Fredrickson reached into his desk and pulled out a manila file labeled Werewolf. Somehow at this point in the story, I can't help but picture Darren McGavin in a light blue seersucker suit, holding a tape recorder and his eyes suddenly going wide. Linda, with those same Carl Kolchak instincts, knew she was onto something. She just wasn't sure what it was. That night, she met with a witness, Lori Andreese, a tough, dark-haired young woman who worked as a manager at an Elkhorn lounge called The Jury Room. 2 years earlier, in the fall of 1989, Andreese was driving home after her shift ended around 1:30 a.m. when she saw something strange on Bray Road. Some kind of animal, the size of a man, appeared to be crouching on the side of the road, gnawing on a dead animal. The creature was brownish-gray, and she remembers seeing its long claws. As her headlights washed over it, she was surprised when the thing didn't run away, but instead turned its head and stared straight at her. Another witness remembers walking home after a long, fun day of sledding in December of 1990 to see a, quote, big dog staring at her and her friends. As they watched, the dog stood up. It too had brownish-gray fur and a head, quote, shaped like a coyote's. It stared at them. This, as it turns out, is a common feature of these kinds of sightings. The animals don't seem afraid of humans. They tend to stare. You know the old saying, don't worry, it's more afraid of you than you are of it. That doesn't appear to be the case with these guys. The witness and her friends ran. The thing chased them. Just as she and her friends reached her house, they looked back to see the creature turn back and disappear into a nearby cornfield. A third witness, a man who worked at the Elkhorn Burger King, reported seeing a, quote, man-like creature running in the vicinity of Bray Road. He said he was shocked by how fast it ran and the power it had. Linda knew she had enough to write her story. And unlike Kolchak's boss, Tony Vincenzo, her editor, John Halverson, was only too happy to run the story as a huge centerfold in that week's edition. Linda, an artist herself, sketched the creature that would soon become known around the world as the Beast of Bray Road. Within weeks, newspapers and television stations all across the country were running the story. Camera crews arrived in Elkhorn. Everyone wanted to talk to Linda and follow up with her witnesses, who all confirmed what they had told Linda. Of course, there were those who cried hoax. Mark Belling, a Milwaukee morning radio host, accused The Week of making the whole thing up to sell newspapers, conveniently ignoring the fact that the paper was free. The story caused quite a stir for a while. Then things died down. But the one thing that remained was Linda Godfrey. She had been the one to break the story, and while she never said that she thought the reports of werewolves were true, she also clearly and faithfully reported what people told her. And that was the thing that made future witnesses feel that in Linda, they had someone they could talk to. Linda was great that way, Kim said. She actually listened. She treated people with kindness and respect. She didn't judge. She didn't make you feel like you were crazy. I glanced outside the cafe window. The snow was just starting to fall. A waiter sauntered over and refilled our coffees. He was tall, maybe 22, with a handlebar mustache and a tattoo of an ornate dagger on his right forearm. He looked like a young Dan Aykroyd. You folks like any food? Finally, I thought. I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go salty or sweet, so I ordered a chili omelet and a stack of old-fashioned pancakes with bananas and walnuts. And whipped cream. Better safe than sorry. Kim and Allison stuck with coffee. When the waiter left, Allison said, with the Beast of Bray Road, Linda thought that would be the end of it, but it was actually just the beginning. It opened the floodgates. Now, I have to admit that when I realized Monsters Among Us was so heavily about bipedal canines, I felt a little, I feel like I want to say embarrassed. It's weird where you draw the line. Yeah, I'm perfectly comfortable reading a book about Bigfoot, or UFOs, or ghosts, or Mothman. But dogmen and werewolves somehow seemed unbelievable. I can't explain it, but the more I read, the more into it I got. And the more the whole thing started plucking at my Fortean heartstrings. After all, why should I discount our canine and lupine brethren? Everything about the reports sounded just like when people see other, more common cryptids. And the stories in this book are so strange, so offbeat, so unbelievable, that before I knew it, I was having a really good time. And I also found myself having a growing respect for Linda Godfrey. The witnesses she works with, they're embarrassed too. You see, there's a special kind of anxiety that comes with witnessing something that isn't taken seriously, even in paranormal circles. Linda was staking her reputation on a real cryptozoological outlier and doing it with no apologies. Linda received emails and letters from all over the world. Reports from people who saw their own dogmen or werewolves. Now, to be clear, there is a difference. There's a word that crops up in stories about dogmen. Some people are surprised they even know the word when they use it to describe what they saw. It's almost like the word has slithered up from some long-forgotten corner of their ancestral mind. The word is Anubis, and it is the name of the Egyptian god with the head of a dog and the body of a really shredded dude. Anubis is the god of funerary rites, protector of graves, and guide to the underworld. The thing you're picturing right now is what they're seeing, just without all the gold necklaces. The pointy ears and the dark black fur are the giveaways. And by the way, none of the dog men that people report look like giant bloodhounds or beagles. There are no immense Lhasa Apso's or pugs. Now, what about werewolves? That's easy. A werewolf is a human being who changes form into that of a wolf. And, people have actually seen this happen. One of my favorite stories in Monsters Among Us takes place behind a laundromat in Torrance, California, and you have no idea the joy that runs through my body saying those words. In fact, there's not a single part of this story that I do not absolutely adore. Torrance is out by LAX, and it happens to be where our composer Nima Kazaruni lives. And Nima, I hope you never see one of these things, because I don't think you'd survive it. Torrance is a city of big streets and freeways and strip malls and fast food joints, and our story of ancient terror takes place right there on a sunny afternoon in 1985. Jennifer, who was 7 at the time, was the main witness, but her 14-year-old brother saw everything that she did. Neither has ever really recovered. Jennifer and her brother were playing catch with a Nerf ball in the driveway of an apartment complex behind the laundromat where their mom was doing laundry. A wild throw sent Jennifer chasing the ball along the open carports that were under the apartments. She retrieved the ball from the very last carport, and when she turned around, she saw a metal hatch in the ground rise up. Now, you've seen hatches like this in sidewalks in New York. So this one was half that size, just one panel, hinged on the back. A man was inside the hatch, and he was holding it up with his back. He had dark features and pale skin and looked to be in his late 20s. Jennifer says he was even kind of handsome, but he scared her. The man, because at this point he still was a man, yelled at her for making noise, but then suddenly changed his tone and said, "It's okay, Jennifer, you don't have to be afraid." But this actually made her more afraid, because even though her brother was yelling for her to come back, he wasn't using her name. How did this man know her name? Her brother ran up to see what was taking her so long and saw her talking to the man. He didn't do anything, he just stood there because this was an adult and they were just kids, so he waited at first. Jennifer thinks she remembers seeing some kind of stairs leading down from where the man was standing and a lantern in a tunnel behind him. Suddenly, the man became agitated and began screaming, "Oh no, not now, not right now!" He started to sweat, and then he started to scream, because his body was changing. His eyes went from dark brown to yellow, and Jennifer could actually hear bones snapping as his jaw and forehead began to change shape. Finally, her brother shouted for her to get away from him, but now the man was actively grabbing at her, and she wasn't sure if she could get past. Hair began to cover his body, and his screams got lower and lower until they were just barking grunts of pain. Jennifer remembers his gums bleeding because his teeth were getting bigger. Her brother was still screaming for her to run, and as the creature turned toward him, Jennifer saw her opportunity and ran. The thing turned and grabbed at her ankle and got enough of a hold to leave a mark, but she pulled away and the two kids ran back to the laundromat. Now their mother remembers how terrified they were, how they were screaming and crying and trying to explain what had happened. It took a while for her to calm them down, and it was difficult to make out their words, but once she heard them say monster, she discounted everything they were saying. She never thought they were joking, but at the same time, she didn't take them seriously, because how could she? Jennifer and her brother begged their mother to leave with them. The creature was going to come in and get all three of them. Jennifer's mom finally allowed them to go sit in the car where they locked themselves in. She then finished up the laundry and they drove home. Now, years later, in 2013, Jennifer returned to the scene of the crime with her husband and daughter. She found the laundromat, no problem. But the carports underneath the apartment complex had now been enclosed, so they were each more like individual garages. The driveway had been repaved, and the hatch was gone. But Jennifer remembers the spot and the incident with terrible clarity. She told Linda that her one wish in life would be to somehow go back in time and avoid the event completely, so that she would have no memory of it at all. Her brother was so upset that he's only spoken about the incident once, and it was to tell Jennifer not to talk about it. He didn't want people to think they were crazy. Linda Godfrey was able to check out the location provided by Jennifer using online satellite maps, which showed the laundromat, the parking lot, and the former carports, all exactly as Jennifer described. Linda's friend and colleague, Sanjay Singhal, happened to be in Los Angeles when Jennifer's report came in, so Linda asked him to check out the site in person. Sanjay confirmed that the area was exactly as Jennifer had described it. He took some photos, and fortunately or not, no transforming monsters showed up. One final detail. The laundromat is now closed. What does Linda say about such stories? She says she finds Jennifer to be a credible witness and leaves it at that. When people ask me about the stories I talk about on this podcast, what they're usually asking is, do you think that really happened? Here's my answer about Jennifer's werewolf. Yes, I think it really happened. I just don't know what it is. There's a chicken and the egg issue at work. Do stories like this exist because people have heard stories about werewolves? Or do werewolf stories exist because people have actually seen werewolves? Descriptions of large-headed, big-eyed, gray aliens were around for decades, maybe centuries before Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but people always think it's the other way around. And I strongly suspect that near-death experiences sound like the, quote, heaven you hear about in church, because people have been having near-death experiences ever since there's been people. And their stories have influenced the creation of all world religions, not the other way around. But come on, you say, a werewolf that lives underneath an apartment complex in Torrance, California in 1985? How would that even be possible? Well, this brings us to the subject of portals, and portals are mentioned by page 2 of Monsters Among Us. Actually, full disclosure, they're mentioned even earlier, in a disclaimer before the table of contents. Linda states, quote, "The word portal may surface now and again. If you do not believe such topics should be spoken of out loud or even privately considered, much less written down and discussed in print, this is not the book for you." The idea that a lot of the strange things people see enter our world through portals is not new. When John Keel talked about such things, no one really took him too seriously because, A lot of the time, John Keel didn't take himself too seriously. But Linda Godfrey did take the idea seriously, and she felt that we had to work with whatever we had when it came down to sorting this mystery out. She asked questions like, what was the weather like when people saw strange creatures? Was there any accompanying phenomenon like strange lights, sounds, or smells? Were recent solar flares a factor? Did sightings of dogmen or werewolves correlate with UFO sightings in the same area around the same time? Did witnesses experience the Oz factor? The Oz factor is a term coined by the British ufologist Jenny Randles, wherein people have, quote, the feeling of being isolated or transported from the real world of everyday life into another environment which is quite similar to the real world, but changed enough to be noticeable and disturbing. For instance, just before seeing Bigfoot, or a UFO, or a werewolf for that matter, people often notice a sudden silence in outdoor areas. No birds, no insects, no wind. They might notice a dramatic change in air temperature or barometric pressure. Or they might be momentarily overcome with strong emotions ranging from euphoria to terror that disappear just as quickly as they arrived. Linda wanted to know if there was an atmospheric factor that could be tied to these feelings and these events. And as it turns out, there is. Mist. A noticeable, rolling, or quickly forming mist is often reported in association with UFO, Bigfoot, dogmen, and werewolf sightings. Sometimes the mist appears just as things go quiet. Sometimes there's a loss of time associated with the mist. Often, the mist is green. Glenn Arnson was hunting in the Escanaba River State Forest in Michigan's Upper Peninsula near the small town of Helps. Yes, it's really called Helps. Just as he came upon a scrawny deer too small to shoot, he suddenly noticed the world around him change. Everything took on a greenish hue. The trees, the ground, the sky, the air. The green air seemed to affect the deer, too, as it rolled over the area the deer shivered and laid down. And as the mist engulfed him, Glenn suddenly experienced a range of intense emotions. Sadness, shame, sorrow, and remorse. He had the intense desire to look up into the sky, but for some reason, he found that he couldn't. As the mist rolled past, he now felt it, quote, sucking the emotion of gloom from him, and it was replaced by an odd euphoria. He says, I wanted to call out to it and say, hey, wait, don't go, come back. I was instantly very happy. This is the weirdest thing that has ever happened to me. As the mist drifted away, Glenn remembers watching the little deer jump up and run after it. That was in 1985. Linda then recounts an incident that occurred 10 years earlier in Essex, England. A family of five was returning home from a social engagement one night. As they drove, they noticed a blue light tracking them through the woods just off the road. Just then, their car entered a large mass of green fog. The radio fizzled, the engine died. Then, after what felt like a few seconds, the engine mysteriously started up again, and the car emerged from the fog. But as they arrived home, they realized that 2 hours had passed that they could not account for. And for weeks afterward, the family experienced nightmares, poltergeist activity in their house, and strangest of all, an intense aversion to eating meat of any kind. At the diner, our food arrived. Well, my food. I had the waiter put the pancakes in between me and Allison and Kim as if it was for the table, but I was relieved when neither one of them seemed to want any. I decided to start with the chili omelet and then have the pancakes for dessert. But then I realized the pancakes might get cold. As no problem is beyond my ability to conquer, I finally decided to alternate bites of omelet and pancakes. Adaptability is all. Linda wrote or co-wrote 17 nonfiction books, and the vast majority concerned dogmen or werewolf-type creatures. It's as if she was almost waiting for something like The Beast of Bray Road to come into her life. A chance to really sink her teeth into a subject that completely consumed her, and yes, I hear it now. We talked about Linda's nimbleness when it came to writing. She spent hours every day at the computer, holding herself as much as she could to a 1,000-word-a-day output. And it was only in 2021 that she published her first novel, something called God Johnson, The Unforgiven Diary of the Disciple of a Lesser God. Now, ironically, some of Linda's biggest fans were totally unaware of her fiction writing, but this was also one of her passions. And she had a way of diagramming her stories that I've never seen before, and I find absolutely fascinating. She would place her main character at the center of a large sheet of paper and draw a circle around them. And then, extending outward, like the yellow beams on a child's drawing of the sun, she would detail the story elements, thematic conflicts, subplots, character relationships, bits of dialogue, really everything that was important for us to know about the main character, each beam another aspect of who they were or what they would do, who they would encounter, friend or foe, another shade in the coloration of their lives. I suppose that once she had extended outward the final beam, she knew her main character was complete, or at least complete enough to send them out on their great adventure. How many of us grew up wishing we could be what Linda Godfrey became? She spent most of her adult life investigating and writing about real-life monsters. The fun kind, not the human kind. I have to imagine there's a generation of young women and men who will read her books, see what she did, and realize they can do it too. One of Alison Jornland's ongoing endeavors is her blog, Paranormal Women, A Hidden History, where she spotlights the women who have been largely responsible for building the foundations of paranormal research. Women like Catherine Crowe, Eleanor Sidgwick, Zora Neale Hurston, Thelma Moss. There were so many, Alison says, quote, but when you look at the field now, you see how few slots there are for women. Alison talked about how sometimes among women, there's a lot of competition and how that can threaten the impulse to collaborate or champion the work of others. But she says, Linda wasn't like that. First of all, she created her own slot. Before her, there just wasn't anyone. When she was on Art Bell, even he said, how often do you ever hear about a woman investigating werewolves? But if Linda's memory has a lasting impact on Alison, it's how it has solidified her desire to reach out to other women in the field and help out when she can. Alison said, ParanormalWomen.com should be for living women too, like Caroline Watt at the University of Edinburgh, or Nancy Zingroni at Paramook. And just so you know, Paramook stands for Parapsychology, Research and Education, Massively Open Online Course. I'm not calling anyone a mook. Alison hopes that one day she can be for other women in her field what Linda was for her, a constant voice of support and encouragement, a true friend. I noticed Kim staring out the window at the gathering snow. We should keep an eye on the time. Snow's only going to get worse, she said. They looked at each other, and then at me. I was focusing on getting an equal amount of pancake, banana, whipped cream, and walnuts onto my fork. After I accomplished this, I asked Kim if Linda ever had any strange encounters of her own. Oh yeah, Kim said, she did. She didn't see it out in the middle of the street or in the middle of the daytime like I did, but she was on an investigation in Michigan with some people, in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, and she shot some very good photos of a dogman standing by the edge of the woods. They went back to the car, got something to drink, and then when they went back out to investigate some more, it was getting dark, so Linda locked her camera in the car. Later, when they went back to the car, and remember, this is in the middle of nowhere, no people around for miles, her camera was gone. I asked Kim if that scared Linda, or made her consider maybe backing away from field research. No way, Kim said. Nothing scared her. More often than not, Linda's excursions into the woods to hunt cryptids resulted in nothing more than her reveling in the beauty of nature, enjoying her friends, and having a laugh when something that jumped out at them turned out to be nothing more than a couple of people on horseback coming down the road or a bullfrog doing a backflip in a pond. We had so much fun. We laughed so much, Kim said. Who knows? Maybe that's an even better legacy than photographing a werewolf. I finish my last bite of food. It turns out to be chili omelet. I resist the impulse to lick the syrup off the pancake plate. I thank Allison and Kim for meeting with me and sharing their stories of Linda. And I happily pay the bill. Where do you think you're going? Kim says. I tell her that I'm headed back to my suite at the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. That minibar's not going to drink itself. Once again, Allison and Kim look at each other, then me. Kim says, "You wanted to know everything you could about Linda. There's only one way to really do that." I don't like where this is going. More than anything, Linda believed in first-hand field research, Allison says. Real boots-on-the-ground investigations. Kim smiles. And the best time to find monsters is at night. I glance out the window at my car, and then back at Kim, who toys idly with her can of bear spray. "You do know how to put up a tent in the snow, right?" she asks. As it turns out, I do not, thank God. "Doesn't matter," Allison says. "We're not going to be sleeping. We're going to be watching for eyeshine." They actually want me to go on an overnight investigation with them. How do I explain I do all my investigating indoors, near a fireplace, with a cocktail in my hand, and my cats Monkey and Stormy on my lap? How can I explain to them that when push comes to shove, I just don't have what it takes? I mean, come on, all night, in the woods, in a snowstorm? How are we going to survive, I ask. Maybe we won't survive, Allison says with a huge laugh. But it'll be the best time of your life. Somehow, I seriously doubt this. We step outside and the cold night air engulfs me. I can smell the snow and the pine trees and the faint whiff of something dark and animal and ancient. There are woods across the highway, but they are black and indistinct, and it is towards these woods that the women walk. Am I really going with them? For a moment, maybe I do understand Linda. If there is still mystery in the world, out there is where you'll find the answers. I take a deep breath, inhaling the mystery and the possibility and the magic that still exists in the unspoiled pockets of our Earth. And I realize that in a world of infinite possibilities, maybe in another dimension or alternate reality or splinter universe, our meeting really did take place at a diner called the Pine Tree Cafe. And we really did have a waiter with a dagger tattoo who looked like Dan Aykroyd. And I really did get to eat a chili omelet and a stack of pancakes with bananas, walnuts, and whipped cream. And the meeting didn't just happen this afternoon on Zoom in my office, where I'm happily safe and warm and miles away from bipedal dogs and werewolves. At least I think so. When someone leaves us, someone who has spent their life really trying to untangle the mystery of reality, I always wonder if now they know the answers. If crossing over is like having a blindfold removed, and suddenly you can see everything that was hidden. I wonder if Linda has insight into the world of werewolves and dogmen and Bigfoot and UFOs and portals now. And if there was a moment of satisfaction, a moment of, oh, so that's what it was. I asked Kimberly, who sees ghosts almost every day and communicates with them, if she's ever heard from Linda. No, she said. I think sometimes folks have someplace else they need to be. I think she had greater things to move on to. I think Kim's probably right. And now when I think of Linda, I see her name in the middle of a large sun with beams of light reaching out in all directions. Every one of them, a place she's been, a mystery she's investigated, a person she has loved, a life she has touched. So many beams, so bright they all blend together into a single shining life. And she is at the center, a complete life. And now it is time for her next adventure to begin. Thank you for joining me on Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf. Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf is presented by Astonishing Legends, 134 West, and Summerland Entertainment. Executive producers, Scott Philbrook, Forrest Burgess, and Susan Lambert. Our associate producer is Tess Feifel, and our sound designer, engineer, and editor is Kevin Ducey. Artwork is by Tommy Beaver, website is by Kayla Lord, and our music, as always, is by Nima Kazaruni. Please join us next time when I take you all the way back to 1997, where you'll find me in Taos, New Mexico, trying to start the very first draft of the Mothman Prophecies screenplay. So, of course, the book I'll be talking about is They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers by Gray Barker. Until then, be safe and be well, find the light in the dark, and we'll see you again soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.